Good morning, CHD. Welcome to Pediatric Perspectives. This is where we are looking at children's health challenges from a different perspective, one that includes critical thinking, and yes, one not afraid to give you the honest truth. I'm your host, Dr. Paul. My guest today, I am bringing back Dr. Christiane Northrup because we had such an incredible show recently and we left some business unfinished. So please welcome back Dr. Christiane Northrup. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure always. Thank you.
I'm not going to belabor your intro because people can learn all of this information, your accolades from our last show and your website, which is just loaded with information. So thank you for making that resource available to our viewers. We left off where we were looking at a parent's guide to healthy children that CHD has put out. And we were just about to start talking about the whole process of delivering babies. And I thought maybe I'm so interested in everything you have to say. I mean, as a OBGYN who's also experienced a more holistic approach, let's chat about the different ways one can have a baby in this country or anywhere in the world for that matter. There's home births, there's birthing centers, there's hospitals. Give us your thoughts on that.
Wow, that is a great topic. And what you find when you look in the literature is a well-supported woman who is healthy. It actually, the maternal mortality is, and the safety of home birth is actually better than a hospital birth. And the reason, no, it's hard to get that data, but it's out there. The reason why you don't hear this is that we are all in this culture kind of brainwashed with the horror stories of, oh my God. And even you even see it. There was a show called ER way back that I used to like. It was kind of everything that happens in a year in a normal emergency room on ER would happen in a day. So very exciting show. What they would do, though, they'd bring these women in labor, and then they'd have some major disaster in the emergency room. Now, I can tell you that if you broke your foot or if you were bleeding to death, but you were pregnant, every hospital sends you right up to labor and delivery. You never stay in the emergency room. So the mainstream culture has made people so afraid of the normal process of birth. But the body, the female body, knows how to give birth if she's not scared to death and if she is well supported. Now, I happened to be an intern when fetal monitoring first came in, and I watched the C-section rate go from less than 10% to 25% literally overnight.
Wow.
Because they didn't know how to read the monitor. And more than that, Dr. Paul, there's never been a single study, not one, that has shown that fetal monitoring, continuous electronic fetal monitoring, has done anything to improve birth outcomes. What it has done is increase the C-section rate everywhere.
Yeah.
And so what it does, and I want women to now hear me on this. Woman's in labor. You come into the room, you ask her how she's doing, and you ask her husband how she's doing, or the father of the baby. Everyone looks at the monitor, just like we're all addicted to the screen and the cell phone. To know how you're doing, you go inside. How are you doing? And we also know that when the fetal monitor shows distress, many times all you have to do is get the woman on her left side, gets the uterus off the blood supply that's returning, and then have her go inside and tell the baby, you're safe. It's okay. Boom, you'll watch the monitor come right back to normal.
My mom was a nurse midwife for many, many years.
Wow.
I grew up in Africa, missionary kid, and she was an RN in Africa, started a clinic that ended up turning into a maternity center plus urgent care.
Amazing.
Had incredible experiences there that made her want to just be a part of life. Like as you went into OBGYN, she became a certified nurse midwife, did training programs, home births. So yes, the data, I've had to look at it because of my mom's experience that, you know, it's incredible. The rate of C-sections for home deliveries is like what, 5% or less, something like that?
Yeah. And Ina May Gaskin pointed out that in the last 30 years, maternal mortality has doubled in the United States. And as you know, maternal mortality is the number one indicator of the health of a society.
Wow. And
our maternal mortality is going up all the time because there's just too many interventions. It would have been fun had I had you as the pediatrician in the room when I did all those deliveries, because a lot of times it seemed to me I kept the baby with the mother and didn't clamp the cord for as long as possible so that the pediatricians would not start beating up the kid.
Yeah. What we were doing was just ridiculous. I mean, on both ends, right? I mean, the hospital world of OBGYN, I mean, I remember when I was in training for my Dartmouth experience, I went to LA for my OBGYN experience, and it was it was horrendous. And were at Compton Watts Hospital, inner city. The way women were treated was just brutal and heartless. It was horrific, absolutely horrific. Okay, so you can do a home birth, and you're absolutely right. What we would see as hospital-based physicians, like as a pediatrician, I taught residents and medical students in the hospital. When we're in training, we're mostly hospital-based. We see that tiny, tiny fraction of things that go wrong at a home birth, and you start thinking, oh, well, see, you shouldn't do any home births. But we don't look at the greater picture of all the beautiful things that went right.
That's exactly right. In fact, here's what we're taught. In standard OBGYN training, a normal labor and birth is a retrospective diagnosis. So what does that do? It makes all the staff view that birthing woman as a disaster about to happen, because you and I both know that when it goes bad in OBGYN, it goes bad really fast.
Yeah.
But the problem is, and this is with the law of attraction, is when you come into a situation terrified, ready to have a disaster happen at every moment, you're actually increasing the chance that that will happen by the law of attraction. It just happens.
So home births only represent, sadly, 0.9%, basically just under 1%, one out of 100 births in this country, in the USA, happening at home. I wish that number could rise, and I wish we could develop the support system. It feels like to me, and you can speak to this maybe, once you set foot in a hospital to have a baby, there are just protocols all over the place. And you're like, the woman is just swept into this series of protocols. Are there things women can do to maybe allow that hospital birth to be reasonably okay?
Yes, and I just had a friend who had that happen. So the baby was an IVF baby. So therefore, the staff thought of this as, well, it's an IVF baby, in vitro fertilization, which means that now it's a high-risk pregnancy. Not necessarily the case. And she went in, and they also told her they wouldn't let her go 1 minute beyond 41 weeks. Again, everything is a curve. So there are perfectly healthy babies born at 42 weeks. Is it true statistically that there's more problem the longer the gestation goes? Yes, but that doesn't mean that your baby is going to be a problem. It's important. A couple things I want women to know. We know now, and I did not know this until very recently, that it is the surfactant in a baby's lungs that sends a signal to the mother and to the pineal of the mother for the Pitocin that it's time to have the baby. So in my profession, we have done all of this stuff to deliver babies for convenience at 37 weeks, 38 weeks, when in fact the lungs have not been mature. So you end up with all these babies having what's called transient tachypnea of the newborn because they weren't ready, just because they were going to survive, of course, at 37 weeks. It's much better. What I'm getting at is it's much better to allow labor to happen on its own instead of inducing. Because when you induce a woman, it is instantly way more painful if you use Pitocin. Then you're going to give her an epidural. And having an epidural paralyzes the, well, when you shut down the sensory nervous system of the pelvis, the motor system doesn't work as well either. It's kind of like when you go to the dentist and you get Novocaine and then you're still numb and you come home to eat soup. You're between the corner of your mouth, right?
Yeah.
This is what we're doing with an epidural. So an epidural will increase the C-section rate, and it also increases something called a fever of unknown origin in the baby. So then the baby gets a sepsis workup. We still don't know why women get a fever from epidurals, but they often do. So you want to go first, wait as long as possible before going to the hospital so that you know you're in real labor. Because let me tell you how often a woman's in good labor. She's on her hands and knees at home because that's what her body wants to do. She gets in the car. She goes in through admitting into the hospital, and she's there giving them all the data that she's already pre-registered to give them. And by the time she gets to her hospital bed, labor stops. Because you have, you wouldn't do this with a cow or a horse. Go down to the barn, turn on a light, start messing with the mare, and and have five people come in to examine. What do you think would happen with a horse? Or as there's a wonderful play called Birth, and the first line in it is, "I want what my dog got." So the first thing is to know what they will do and not be scared into doing the thing. Okay. Yeah. Like, don't allow membranes to be ruptured. How many times did I go in and, I was taught, okay, get a 16 gauge needle in that woman's arm, rupture the membrane, stick in an intrauterine pressure catheter, screw a scalp electrode to the crown of the baby, seventh chakra. And then once you've done all that and she's completely hooked up, then you can relax. Well, by then you've screwed up everything.
Yeah, that was the training I got back in the day. I just had a daughter deliver a baby at home with at 42 and a half weeks.
Yay.
first baby.
Yeah.
And it was a long labor. And I don't know how she pulled it off, but she was determined, had the support, had a loving husband, had a doula type person, somebody there to help her. And by God, they did it. And we have a beautiful little healthy baby. Had she gone in when she was being told to go in, which was 41 weeks, like you said, probably she would have ended up with a C-section, happens. Do you think, that while you're pregnant, you're planning to have a baby, and like I said, so many are ending up in the hospital. Does it help to do trainings like Lamaze or Alexander or Bradley Method, or maybe you've got an approach for how to have moms prepare to maybe pull it off naturally, or at least have a vaginal, not a C-section birth?
It's really interesting. A woman named Gail Peterson, who was working with Louis Mail, and you might remember Louis Mail from way back, she did the most fascinating study, where she did a prospective study of women, and she could predict within 95% accuracy who was going to get into trouble in labor and why. And here's why. Women labor as they live. And so when you go into labor, you're in a crisis mode. There's no getting out. You're in it. And it takes you, as my daughter said, to some very dark places because your body is doing it one way or another. The degree to which you live your life as a victim, like, I need someone to come and rescue me, versus I trust this body and I know I'm strong and I am a vessel for new life. That's what you want to work on. Now, it can be done through the Bradley Method, or any of those things are fine. But once you get into labor, you're in it. You're in it. And you are going to have to go deeper into yourself than you ever knew was possible, and it changes you. It is a death to your old self so that you can become a mother. It's literally changes you. And so you have to go through, it's like going through the dark night of the soul. And what we do in this culture, because we have so much problem with the natural process of life, birth and death, right? We have a terrible time with death. Death doesn't exist. So therefore, you're not prepared to go down into the underworld, which is what labor does, and then come up on the other side. And so anything that prepares you for what you can't really prepare for, but that you know, that's why you need the support. You remember, maybe you knew these doula studies that Klaus and Kennel did. And what they found, they did these studies in Guatemala, and they found that just having a woman standing by out in the hallway, for heaven's sakes, with a laboring woman, just smiling, telling her she's doing well, it decreased the C-section rate by 50% and decreased the labor time by, I don't know what it was, you know, from like 12 hours to six, just from having that doula there, the woman standing by. So you need this external placenta of support. And then what a woman will always say, I couldn't have done it without you. That is because when two or more are gathered, there will I be also. So no woman should be doing this alone. Although, Dr. Paul, there are women now doing free birth. Like they will just deliver at home, like with just their husband around. And there's a growing movement for this, where women are finding that power and having amazing experiences at home. But what labor does is it's kind of like all these processes of the female body. They lay bare who we really are, and women labor as they live.
That's profound. I know a person who's been a doula and a labor massage support person. And it speaks powerfully because I've seen the connection that if you have that trusting support, I mean, we think back before modern medicine, the family, the mom, grandma, great grandma, they were all there involved. And you as a laboring mom, especially younger, newer moms, would have that generational support.
Yes. Yes. They also knew breastfeeding. They knew how to, that was just normal. At the farm, Ina Mae Gaskin's place where she did all those amazing work that went into the book Spiritual Midwifery and Ina Mae's Guide to Childbirth, their C-section rate there is 2%.
Wow.
2%, and they deliver breeches.
I'm going to switch the subject a little bit. Thank you for this. This understanding of basically the emotional, spiritual aspect to birth and all that. It's so beautiful and it's so vital. I can see it. I got goosebumps as you're sharing some of these ideas and concepts because it just makes sense. Yeah. Intuitively, it makes sense. But if you're a mom in this world today, you're going to have to create that environment for yourself. Yes. It won't just happen.
No.
You can't just walk into the hospital and expect all these beautiful things you're talking about. I think you have to really be intentional.
That's for sure. That's for sure. And then you want to also know, okay, your baby does not need vitamin K. It's normal for vitamin K levels to be a little low. You do not want hypercoagulable blood. Nobody needs a hepatitis B shot. The only way to get Hep B is to have sex with prostitutes or use a dirty needle with drug addicts. Babies are not doing that. Last time I checked. So there's things that you want to do and, you know, have ready. Also, you know, we could do a whole show on circumcision and the fact that that's not necessary either. I had a colleague who did the circumcision of the male baby in the delivery room to get it over with. And I thought, no, there's an imprint. Welcome to planet Earth. Not only are we going to clamp the cord and say, breathe, but now we're going to cut off 40,000 nerve endings from the most sensitive part of your body.
Right. And here's the Hep B shot and here's a vitamin K shot and welcome to the world.
That's it. That's it.
It's just not right.
No, but where we're going is right. I have every hope that we are in this wonderful period of reawakening because I'm seeing beautiful things with young people who are awake and aware. Now, there are plenty who are not. but I've noticed, despite all of my knowledge, I can't save them. I have tried, and so have you.
Yep. But it's there for those who are willing. So let's speak to those who are at least on the fence and able to listen. If you had a grandchild who was going to have a baby, or a child of yours who was going to have a baby, and they really hadn't given it much thought, what would you want them to know?
I would want them to know that this powerful experience called birth is available. I might have them see if they could find one of those DVDs of water babies, of all the women in Russia who go to the Black Sea and have their babies, and just see what's available. Water birth has come in even into the hospital, which is very good. I would also tell them, please avoid all of those negative stories. If there's something really weird that happens with women, you know, men tell war stories. Well, women's version of a war story is their labor experience, if it was bad. They feel the need to tell you these things. And when I was pregnant, people would come up and tell me these disaster stories. And as an OBGYN resident, I knew this wasn't true, but it was very strange to me. So protect yourself. And here's the thing. There's only so much you can tell someone. If they're open, give them the information. Many times your adult children will not be open to what you have to say. So what you can do, give them something like this, what Dr. Paul and I are doing, that isn't about you telling them. Get a third person to tell them. You can present it. It's the lead the horse to water. And like we say, you can't make him drink, but you can make him really thirsty.
I like that. I like that a lot. You have an organization, standfirmnow.org.
Yep.
Tell us just a little bit about that.
When the whole COVID thing started and we were seeing what we were seeing, I met a non-bar attorney named Sean Rice, and he said, this was actually a felony homicide situation. Is you cannot mandate and legislate what turned out to be murder when we found what the real data was, and somehow grant yourself immunity. So throughout the entire world, the powers that be were granting themselves immunity, saying this was safe and effective, when we knew it wasn't. So what we did was we created an affidavit strategy. An affidavit is a very powerful legal instrument where a doctor, a nurse, anyone who's around bodies attests to the truth of a series of statements. So we have come up with the 22 COVID commonalities, like there was never a pandemic in the way they told us, that the PCR test was never invented for what it was used for, that it closed down the world for no good reason. The inventor of it, Corey Mullis, said as much. And so we have this backed up by, I think we're up to 450 exhibits. That's the data, that's the proof that what they did not have any standing. And so what we're doing is we're gathering these signed affidavits that are then notarized. A notary is an official of the court. And when you have these affidavits, which we've been collecting now for 2 years, these can go right into the court and we will not have to prove standing. You will be able to go in and show that that this has been a felony homicide situation from the beginning. So right now we're connecting with another group that is in line with Missouri versus Biden on media censorship by big tech working through the Biden administration. And that includes the disinformation dozen. That was the 12 people who were censored on all platforms. And the lie from the Center for the Countering of Digital Hate, a Soros Foundation funded out of London, named 12 people. I was one of them as responsible.
Congratulations, by the way.
Yeah, it's my, you know, it's my biggest accolade that we were responsible for 70% of the misinformation about COVID on the internet. That was never true. And Sayer G from Green Med Info has proven it was never true. Nonetheless, we were all censured. So we're part of that lawsuit to go after those who globally censored anyone who told the truth. And I know very well that you have been in the crosshairs of that, having lost your license right after you published the data showing that unvaccinated children were far healthier than vaccinated children.
Yeah, they didn't want to hear that.
No.
That was the data they asked for, though. Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
Yep. So before we close, and I know we're running out of time, you also have a project, I think it's Five Doctors, Setting the Record Straight, something you're going to launch, I think, in April. Can you tell us just quickly about that?
Yes. The five docs are Dr. Lee Merritt, Sherry Tenpenny, Carrie Made, Larry Kalevsky, and me. And we have been doing monthly podcasts of telling people the real truth. We came out early on and said, COVID is not really what you think it is. And Dr. Tenpenny came out with the 40 mechanisms of injury of the shot. And we've been trying to educate people from that time on. We're doing a boot camp, which starts in April. You can sign up now and get a discount. And we're calling it Setting the Record Straight. And then we will tell you exactly what you need to be doing to regain your health or to keep it in the first place. So learningforyou.org/5docs2024.
Wow. You're just full of resources for our viewers, and I'm going to go check this out as well. I just appreciate you so much, and I'm going to give you the last word here, and just share whatever it is on your heart that you want people to know.
Well, because we are talking about labor and birth and pregnancy, here's what I want you to know. If you are a healthy couple, if you are a healthy woman, please repopulate the planet with your beautiful children. We need them.
Amen. That is wonderful. Thank you, Christiane. It's always a pleasure. Can't wait till we can have a cup of coffee together.
Right, right. Wonderful, Dr. Paul. Thank you.
You can check out my other show, With the Wind, at doctorsinscience.com. You can also reach me directly, even book a coaching session if you wish, at kidsfirstforever.com, the number 4. Both these links are in the show notes. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you next week.